Good morning, everyone, and David, thank you for that introduction and for the invitation to take part today. I'd also like to thank CIFA for the opportunity to be part of this conference and for the work that it's done in this area. It's an extremely important topic, and the Reserve Bank is strongly supportive of the work that you've been doing in this area, so thank you. In my own view, internationalisation of the RMB could ultimately prove to be as transformative for global capital markets as was the earlier opening up of China's borders for global trade. And even if this turns out to be only half correct, then we need to better understand the process of internationalisation of the RMB, including the pitfalls and the opportunities. And this conference and the work that CIFA has been doing is an important step in that journey of understanding, and again, I congratulate you on that work. At the outset, I think it's useful to be precise about what we mean when we talk about internationalisation. In my own view, for a country's currency to be viewed as internationalised, there are two key conditions that need to be met. The first is that the country's currency is used for transactions between its residents and non-residents. And the progress that China is making in this area is significant, and particularly on the trade side. Over the past few years, the share of China's international trade that's denominated in RMB has increased significantly, and that trend's going to continue. On the investment side, there's been an expansion in the schemes that permit approved foreign residents to invest RMB in China. Indeed, over recent times, a number of central banks, including our own central bank, have invested some of their foreign reserves in RMB. The market for offshore RMB-denominated bonds has also grown strongly in Chinese, with Chinese residents accounting for the majority of issuance. And further plans have been announced to allow Chinese residents to invest RMB in approved offshore destinations. So there's been quite a lot happening in this area. The second condition is that the currency is used in transactions between non-residents. In particular, a truly internationalised currency is one where non-residents are willing to raise funds in that currency despite ultimately being in need of another currency, and non-residents are willing to hold unhedged exposure to that currency. Now, China has made some progress in this area, but to date, that progress is relatively limited. There have been some reports of non-residents issuing RMB-denominated bonds in the offshore market and swapping the proceeds into their home currencies. But in general, you'd have to say there's still a fair way to go here, including the development of markets that would support the use of RMB in this way. Ultimately, further progress in internationalising the RMB is inextricably linked to China's transition towards capital account liberalisation and a more flexible exchange rate. Experience elsewhere around the world, including here in Australia, suggests that extensive exchange controls and a highly managed exchange rate are unlikely to be consistent with an internationalised currency. My impression is the Chinese authorities understand this and that they've signalled their intention to further liberalise the capital account and move to a system of a more flexible exchange rate. And we saw the latest step in this transition just last week when the daily trading range for the RMB against the US dollar was widened from plus or minus 1% to plus or minus 2%. While this journey is clearly a gradual one, I suspect that over the years ahead, the further liberalisation of the Chinese capital account could turn out to be one of the truly significant events in global capital markets. To date, much of the capital outflow from China has been intermediated indirectly by the People's Bank of China through its intervention in the foreign exchange market and its accumulation of over $3.5 trillion US dollars of foreign reserves. At some point, as the controls on capital outflows are lifted, this model of intermediation is likely to change. And as it does, the non-official sector will become increasingly responsible for managing the foreign assets of Chinese residents. And as CIFA's report notes, this transaction is likely to be associated with an increase in outflows of private capital from China. This is likely to lead to a change in the type of foreign assets that Chinese entities hold, and it could have very significant implications for some of the asset markets in the countries that receive these new private outflows. The increase in private outflows is also likely to lead to an increase in the demand for hedging products by Chinese entities, as at least some of these entities will want to hedge the currency risks on their new offshore investments. And this growing demand for hedging instruments is likely to support the development of the foreign exchange market in China. This ability to hedge foreign exchange risk is, alongside the ability to dominate foreign liabilities in local currencies, it's an important ingredient in helping ensure that the benefits associated with a more open capital account and a more flexible exchange rate are not outweighed by the potential financial instability costs. Indeed, the development of deep and liquid hedging markets is one of the reasons why Australia's experience with capital account liberalisation and exchange rate flexibility has worked out so well. When we first moved from a fixed, then to a managed, and now to a floating exchange rate regime through the 1970s and 80s, these markets were not well developed, but they've since matured very significantly. And in large part, this occurred organically in response to the increase in demand for hedging products that arose once the exchange rate became more variable, and I think this will turn out to be the case in China as well. This positive feedback loop between liberalisation and market development is also an important lesson from our own experience. If liberalisation does not occur, it's hard for markets to develop. And if markets are not developed, it's hard to liberalise. But a gradual process of liberalisation can promote market development, and it can promote stability, which makes it easier to liberalise further. Now, one element of this positive feedback loop is the greater use of RMB for trade invoicing by Chinese firms can allow these firms to reduce currency mismatches on their balance sheet and thus alleviate potential vulnerabilities that could otherwise arise from a more flexible exchange rate. Another is that as capital account liberalisation proceeds, the entry of non-residents to China's domestic financial markets will increase the depth of these markets. And as non-residents become more willing to take RMB exposures, the pool of potential counterparties for Chinese entities seeking to hedge their foreign currency liabilities will also increase. Now, no one can really be sure about how this whole process of RMB internationalisation is going to work out. That's partly because there's no historical precedent here for a country of China's size and relative stage of development integrating itself into a global financial system that is as complex and as interconnected as the one we currently have today. And there are, as Professor Eichengreen highlights in his paper, an array of challenges, risks and uncertainties inherent to China's transition to more open, an open market-based economy. And in some ways, the task for China is more difficult than it has been for other countries that have made the same journey, including ourselves. There is much greater international scrutiny, and the rest of the world clearly has a very strong interest in the outcome. And second, China's financial sector is already very large relative to GDP, meaning that setbacks in the reform process could have very significant effects on the broader Chinese economy. That said, if Australia's experience is any guide at all, this journey can turn out to be a very positive one. For us, financial reform and integration of our capital markets into the global system delivered the basis for sound macro policy, more diversified portfolios for Australian investors, and the development of tools for hedging risks. But this journey was not without its troubles, and there was a lot of learning along the way. At the beginning, the risk management skills of the Australian banks were inadequate to cope with a world in which there was freer access to capital, and credit was no longer rationed, and regulators too were ill-equipped to provide the effective supervision that was needed. And the combination of these institutional weaknesses and intense competition amongst banks manifested itself in a bubble and then a bust in the commercial property market in the late 1980s. Today, China is going through some of its own adjustment pains. But we should not forget that internationalisation of the RMB holds out the promise of the same benefits for China that internationalisation of the Australian dollar has delivered for us here in Australia. And the effects will not just be felt in China itself, but they will be felt throughout the world. Amongst other things, the opening of the Chinese capital account and the process of internationalisation may well elevate the RMB to international reserve currency status.
While this still looks to be some way off to me, it would represent a profound change in the nature of the international monetary and financial system. And some of the potential impacts of this are explored for us in Prasanna Guy's paper for this conference. I'd also like to briefly touch on some of the implications of RMB internationalisation for us here in Australia. It's perhaps stating the obvious to say that we have a very strong interest in China's reform journey being a successful one. Financial reform can play a significant role in promoting economic and financial stability in China, which, as you all know, is our major trading partner. Furthermore, over time, a change in the structure of the Chinese capital flows could have significant implications for our own capital and asset markets, and an increased demand for hedging products and other financial instruments will open up new opportunities for our financial institutions. In the immediate future, Australia's already strong trade links with China and our growing financial linkages between our two countries mean that there are mutually beneficial opportunities for RMB from RMB internationalisation. And many of these are explored in CIFA's research report, which Jeff will talk to us later today about. One of these is that Australia's funds management industry can benefit from increased investment opportunities within China as inward capital flows to China increases. It can also benefit from sharing its expertise with Chinese funds managers and or providing direct funds management services to Chinese investors as private capital outflow from China also increases. And similarly, the use of RMB for trade settlement in commodity markets may also be mutually advantageous. In this context, the results of the survey that CIFA has conducted of Australian and Chinese firms' attitudes towards the use of RMB as a trade invoicing currency are particularly relevant. The CIFA survey is an extended version of an earlier RBA survey of Australian firms that was conducted with the help of our local banks in the lead up to the inaugural Australia-Hong Kong RMB Trade and Investment Dialogue in Sydney, which we held in April last year. And this more recent survey, which Cathy Walsh will present later today, highlights the fact that many Chinese firms are still not aware that RMB can be used as a trade settlement currency. More positively, some of the impediments to RMB trade settlement that were evident in the RBA's initial survey, in particular those related to administrative burden and payment delays, appear to have lessened a bit recently. With the second Australia-Hong Kong RMB Trade and Investment Dialogue coming up in May in Hong Kong, the survey results highlight the importance of efforts to educate both Australian and Chinese firms about the RMB trade settlement process and the RMB banking and hedging products that are already available in our marketplace. So in this regard, I welcome the Australian financial sector's efforts to support the development of an RMB market here in Sydney, in particular by ensuring that the current and future RMB product needs of Australian corporates are met and that clients have ready access to information. And another encouraging sign is the recent announcement by two Chinese banks operating here in Sydney regarding the RMB clearing services. So in conclusion, the internationalisation of the RMB and China's move towards a more liberal capital account and more flexible exchange rate regime does have the potential to create a seismic shift in international monetary and financial arrangements. And while China clearly has a very strong interest in getting this process right, the rest of the world, including us here in Australia, also have a strong interest in the outcome. Now, history teaches us that financial deregulation is an inherently risky process, but that it is a process that can deliver substantial payoffs if it is done well. And conferences like this are an important part of understanding this whole process. And so I wish you all the best in exploring the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead. And I congratulate CIFA for its work in this area. Thank you very much.